Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hello, my good man.
Welcome, everyone. It's time for On the Couch with Sick and Bloom.
A lot of crazy, crazy things.
Looking at fantasy football from a deeper place.
This is going to be a changing day in your life.
And now here's your host, Sick and Bloom.
But I would not phone my mother.
Who was the biggest winner in the 2023 NFL draft? That and more this week on the couch. Chris Toprazzo, who was the biggest winner in the draft?
To me, it was the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think they are kind of flying under the radar in that the AFC North is all about Joe Burrow, and the Lamar Jackson deal really captured our attention for a large chunk of this offseason right before the draft. The Pittsburgh Steelers going into year two of the Kenny Pickett era. I think the Kenny Pickett / George Pickens era, because he was so good as a rookie and showed us all those circus reel catches that we saw early in his Georgia career. To get Broderick Jones in the first round, who I was a little bit lower on, but think long term he can be that Andrew Thomas type that might have some growing pains early, but then in like year two or year three we're like, wow, this guy is just an athletic, strong physical specimen. To get that left tackle, to get that fortified for year two for Kenny Pickett, I think was huge in the first round. And then the rest of the draft, I just think was so vintage Pittsburgh Steelers. Keanu Benton, I think, is going to be so good right away. Powerful, up the field, nose tackle, great run defender. The athleticism was there. The run stopping ability at Wisconsin was certainly there. And I love Darnell Washington. I thought he was someone that should have been picked much earlier than he did. Blocking is certainly there. He's a mammoth target. I remember listening to a With the First Pick podcast on CBS Sports Podcast Network with Rick Spielman. And he said that someone that he had talked to that was currently in the league said that throwing the football to Darnell Washington is like throwing it into a mattress. Like, he's just that big of a guy. His catch radius is that large. So I think those three players right there, I think just will change what this team can do offensively. And that's really what it's all about today in the NFL. And I did think that they probably needed, and maybe you're the Steelers expert and speak on this more, Keanu Benton is kind of a piece that they needed on the interior of that defense as well.
Yeah, that's your Javon Hargrave replacement, you know.
Yes.
And Stephon Tuitt is retired, and Cam Hayward's awesome, but he can only last for so long. There's a lot of good elements in there, right? When we think about a draft, even though the heat of the moment had just passed, there's that whole school, you shouldn't grade drafts, but we can. We understand what these players represent. We understand how these teams are going about. Well, in some cases, we're learning how these teams are going to go about winning, or what they think they can do to go about winning. And there's value. There's whether these players fit needs, and there's fit. And I think you always have that with the Steelers. You didn't mention Joey Porter, but they did.
Joey Porter.
Obviously. Yep. But I mean, and that's a fit, right? We're getting into, isn't it wild? I was watching a baseball game. It was like Bob Hewitt Jr. and Fernando Tatis Jr. were both off, right? Joey Porter Jr. is a draft pick for the Steelers. And you're seeing this family. And I think that fit for the Steelers also just comes back to the person, the personality, and what makes people tick. And there's a lot of good fits here. Nick Herbig even, right? It's just a good fit. And the thing is, with a player like Washington, you mentioned the mattress. I like that picture, mental picture. Matt Waldman called him a broadsword. I like that, you know. you can fit in a two tight end set. The Steelers are going to want to run two tight ends anyway. They want to run the ball. The running game did start to come on later last year. Broderick Jones, I can't remember when the Steelers had a left tackle like him, to be honest. That athletic, with that high of a ceiling. And you have Jones and Washington, again, family, right? These two guys literally lined up next to each other. Like if you were watching a tape, you were going to see Jones and vice versa. So yeah, all these things fit. It fits needs. They were good value picks. With Jones, you have the butterfly wings of Green Bay and the Jets swapping 15 and 13. Yeah. If the Jets are sitting at 13, do they take Jones? Does that change?
Probably.
Who knows how many picks and destiny. Lots of destiny changing in the NFL draft. All right, so the Steelers, I mean, of course, it warms my heart that you gave the Steelers a thumbs up. Who's a team that you might give a thumbs down? Who's a team that you thought left scratching your head or you just disagreed with what they were doing?
Probably the Atlanta Falcons. And I know, like, from a fantasy perspective, everyone's excited about Bijan Robinson there. And I'm going to sound like a broken record, and I don't want to. I want to give some insights, some fresh takes to this podcast, but I'll just be quick on this. It's just the idea that we've seen out there since the draft that the Falcons were already really good running the football last year. They lock up Chris Lindstrom. They have a good offensive line. They have a run-heavy, run-first head coach that's a proven schemer in that regard in Arthur Smith from his time in Tennessee with Derrick Henry. Maybe he wanted his Derrick Henry 2.0, and that's what he really pushed for with Bijan Robinson. But I thought Tyler Allgeier was really good last season, almost 5 yards per carry, was near the top of the league in yards after contact per rush. Cordarrelle Patterson, even in his 30s, is very capable as a converted wide receiver. I just thought this was a team that in kind of a very watered down NFC South, they could have traded back. They could have gone in much different directions or many different directions at more valuable spots and picked like Tajay Spears in the third round, who the Titans picked. Someone like that, Izzy Abanikanda, goes in the fifth round to the Jets, which I think he's a home run hitter that's deceptively good with his contact balance, breaking tackles. They didn't need to necessarily be the team to pick Bijan Robinson. They're going to get good production from him. He could have a Saquon Barkley-esque impact on that team. But I think long run, we're going to look and say, why didn't they ultimately just gather more picks? They have made a lot of moves in the offseason, and I think they'll be better, and they could win the NFC South at 8-9 this season. But are they going to go deep into the playoffs? I mean, the NFC as a whole, it is watered down. But I think to have your ultimate goal, of course, being to win a Super Bowl, I just didn't like what they did with that selection. Matthew Bergeron, I thought, was selected a little bit too early from Syracuse. Has all the talent, but he's kind of like a lesser version of Broderick Jones, that he has the size and the athleticism. The balance wasn't there for me. I'm not sure if he's actually going to stay at tackle. So after the Drake London pick that I liked a lot, I was down with the Kyle Pitts selection because those two guys, to me, in terms of their size, their athleticism, they were kind of unicorn type players at valuable spots to load up on offense, I think is smart in today's NFL. But to do it at number 8 overall in a very, I mean, universally regarded as a very deep running back group, and we ultimately saw some really good players picked later, just thought that was a weird way to try to continue to build this team for Terry Fontenot.
Yeah. It makes sense when you simulate the Falcons' mindset. But then
for sure.
So it's in alignment. I mean, at least they're not the worst. The thing that's like nails on a chalkboard, Chris, during the draft is whenever you sense discord within an organization. Mm-hmm. And even based on what you know, or if you're trying to logically piece together, okay, well, what mindset, what philosophy of winning football games, what assessment of what matters
exactly
fits with these picks? And Bijan Robinson fits with what we know about Atlanta. I think there's a larger debate, and I say this almost every time we talk about the draft, I think there's a larger debate about football that the draft kicks off. And I don't like to get into the NBA stuff. I don't like to get into the resource allocation, because I understand, yes, top players at other positions than running back get paid more, so you can bank more surplus value from a cornerback or a tackle or what have you. But first you have to hit on the pick. First you have to act to get someone who can play.
Yep.
It's great to say, well, if this guy hits, we would be saving, you know, $11 million a year instead of, well, geez, a running back just costs like $6 million a year at most now. I mean, perfectly fine running backs are going for the league minimum, you know, Damian Harris, guys like that. So it's from a money perspective, it's replaceable, but you still have to have a player that's going to add value. But then the larger question, Chris, is, like you said, if the running game is humming, if the running game is working, then how much value does a Bijan Robinson add? You know, he turns 4-yard runs into 6-yard runs, but those 4-yard runs still keep you on schedule down in distance. I forget who it was. I was seeing a conversation about putting him in the slot. Well, is he really going to be a better route runner, better at receiving skills than your second tight end or your third wide receiver? I mean, is that really advantageous? What advantages can you create? What advantages can you create because you have Bijan Robinson that you didn't have if you don't have him? And I think it's a fair question to ask if a running back like Christian McCaffrey, I think, is going to be a wonderful test case because San Francisco's running game is a plug-and-play running game. Christian McCaffrey is one of the running backs that, at least theoretically, based on his pay, right, based on the draft compensation, even if you don't think Christian McCaffrey's getting another big contract, a team gave up pretty valuable draft picks to get him. But does he actually help the San Francisco 49ers win games, or would they be just fine with Elijah Mitchell and Tyrion Davis Price or whoever? But that's what we love about the draft. I didn't get a chance to talk to you before the draft, Chris. But, and again, you know, folks, if you don't know Chris's work, CBS Sports. But you mentioned something about Bergeron, maybe that you didn't have him as high. So let me just ask you this general question, and then we can talk more about the player or the team or whatever. Who's a player that when you saw the draft, right, and how it all shook out, that you just are out of step with the NFL based on where this player, or at least the team that took him, that you're just out of step, that you thought, whether it was too high or too low, that your assessment as a player is obviously way different than the NFL?
Great question. I'm trying to think. A million players are going through my head right now. Actually, I'll go back to the Steelers, not to just make this a Steelers podcast. Corey Trice from Purdue. I had an early second round grade on him. And he went in the 7th round. I think beyond Joey Porter Jr., don't be shocked if Corey Trice actually is able to hit the ground running a little bit sooner than Joey Porter Jr. in that defense. He ran in the mid-4.4s. He played 5 years at Purdue, just suffocating in press man. He was one of the best press man corners I watched. Awesome tackler, too. So many cornerbacks, and I get it. Most cornerbacks, you're drafting them, you're grading them to be good in coverage, make plays on the football, mirror, suffocate those throwing lanes. But to be a really sure tackler, I think adds value that we kind of miss out on, or it gets overlooked on those outside pitch plays, how many wide receiver screens we see today. Corey Trice, I thought at his size with his immense length, was so sure of a tackler. Boosted his grade a lot in my grading system. And then he tested really well. So I thought he would have been completely fine going in the second round because he was a little older, not conceivably as much upside as someone like Joey Porter, who's younger, who's a little younger, or, you know, a Christian Gonzalez, who was 21 years old. But that was one where I was repeatedly tweeting. There was no, you know, he didn't work out. He has injury history. He has off-field concerns. Corey Trice, to me, from Purdue, I think is going to be that gem in the Steelers secondary that we're going to be narrowed or zeroed in and have our narrow focus on Joey Porter Jr. But Corey Trice was very high floor to me, given all the experience he had in the Big Ten and just how much productivity he had batting down passes, intercepting the football. And again, being such a reliable tackler.
Yeah. Productivity is important. I get on this,
especially a corner.
Well, that's what I was going to say at corner. I was going to say productivity is important at corner, maybe more than other positions, because there really is just something. I remember back in the few years that I was doing hardcore draft and analysis like y'all are doing, and scouting all the positions and really having to have some sort of internally consistent philosophy of what matters at the position, really not being passive when you're watching these players, because you should always be, when you're doing the draft to NFL projection, have some sort of filter understanding that not every play is equal importance for understanding the projection of this player on the in the NFL.
Absolutely.
And in a quarterback, sometimes Chris, sometimes it can just be as simple as, do you get your hands on the ball? How often do you get your hands on the ball? Right, let's just play a game. The ball's thrown towards you. How often do you actually interfere with the play and keep it from happening? Although with some players, they just don't even throw at them. Anyway, I love it. Steelers praise. Okay, let's go through, because you mentioned fantasy, let's just go through and hit real fast on what you thought of the fits, and just generally, like, warm to cool, hot, cold, how you are looking at these players long term for fantasy. And let's start where you're at, Western New York, and the Bills making a decisive move. I don't know if they thought Dallas was going to take Kincaid or someone else was going to move up for Kincaid, but they had enough clarity to say this was the guy we wanted. What did you think?
So I had Dalton Kincaid graded like at the, I think he was like my first or second round grade. So he was like not that far. And I usually give some leeway with teams when I'm doing those like live grades for CBS that like, if there's a little bit, if someone goes 25th and I had him graded at 33, I don't consider that a gigantic reach. Cause I get that there's a range or some variance. I think the fit makes more sense as opposed to, like, I would have just in a vacuum picked either Michael Mayer or Sam Laporta from Iowa, but the Bills, or even Darnell Washington, honestly, but the Bills have placed such a high emphasis on separation ability and quickness, not just Ken Dorsey's offense, like in Ken Dorsey's offense last season, but during the whole Bean and McDermott era with John Brown signing and Cole Beasley, of course, Stephon Diggs. A lot of the pieces that they had to plug in last season, kind of in that ragtag wide receiver group, they're all smaller, can get open. I think they like that for Josh Allen. I think Josh Allen prefers that. So Kincaid didn't have my highest grade among the tight ends, but if you were to ask me which one is the best, just pure separator, quickness, explosion, feel for the position, feel for when it's zone or man, where that vacancy is, that would certainly have been Dalton Kincaid. And ironically, like there were some criticism that, hey, they just signed Dawson Knox to an extension before last season. Why would they draft another tight end? And they have not run a lot of 12 personnel with the two tight ends on the field. I think the Bills do want to run more 12 personnel to keep defenses on their heels a little bit. Is it a run? Is it a pass? They've been one of the most pass happy teams over the last 4 or 5 years. They, even going from Brian Daboll to Ken Dorsey, they, you know, continue to throw the football on first down as much as any team in terms of percentage. So I think they want to do that. What was interesting though, is that Dawson Knox, big problem with him, he's not very sure handed. There were a lot of times throughout his, you know, first 3 years with the Bills that he's dropped a lot of very important catches, easy catches. It's really the circus grabs are the ones where he's been able to kind of reel those in. Kincaid has tremendous hands. He catches everything in traffic, away from his body while he's taking a hit. So I think the fit is better than where I ultimately had Kincaid graded. I think they, I mean, I can't say that he's going to be Cole Beasley 2.0 and catch 80 passes as a rookie. That's setting the bar too high for a rookie tight end. But if you're looking back, and I've seen some tweets that say, hey, look, like rookie tight ends barely produce, like there hasn't been a good history of them over the last decade. I think there really will be an emphasis beyond Stephon Diggs, of course, in getting Dalton Kincaid into that Cole Beasley role in the slot to run 5 and 6 yard stick routes, option routes to just get the Bills into 2nd and 3 and 2nd and 4. They were really missing that for most of the season last year.
Make things easier for Josh Allen. Make things easier for Josh Allen, right? And I like the mental picture that you drew of, okay, as a draft analyst, people like rankings. People want rankings. Can't tell you how many times there are things that people want rankings, and it's okay. Everything. And I'm not complaining at the people. I love the people. If, without the people, we're not sitting here talking about this, doing this as our job. And people like ordered lists with numbers. So you have to rank the players at positions, and tiers help breaking players out into tiers and saying these players are roughly in the same vicinity of value. And then you drop down. I'll tell you what is kind of worthless to an audience, or like NFL scouting grades, like the classic 6.8 to a 6.2 is like everything, but they're both in the sixes. I don't understand. Anyway, that's a whole other rant. But the idea is but what you're really doing as a draft analyst is trying to create an accurate picture of here's the hot zones and cold zones in this player's game. And then maybe some stuff that we're kind of agnostic about. We don't know because it hasn't really been tried, or we don't know if this player can do this. And then you have on the other side, a template for a team and what they value at the position, or like you said, maybe an aspiration they have. That's one of the great things about the draft, is it should, if teams are rational and there's not that tug of war going on, it should show you their aspirations. It should show you, like, we could talk about the Zay Flowers pick with Baltimore. Maybe we will. So what Dalton Kincaid does, where his hot zones are exactly like what you're saying, that the Bills need right now, what they've been lacking. And it makes him more valuable to them, even though in a vacuum, you're saying if I'm starting a team from scratch, isn't that what draft rankings are basically?
Like, yes,
an expansion team. If I was just starting an expansion team,
Yeah. Like I always have to mention that just to jump in quick. Yeah. I always have to mention that during draft season that like a big board from 1 to 100, 1 to 300 is just hot. Like how I view different skill or talent categories at every position. Like if I were either just starting a team from scratch or it's not factoring in, it's not team centric whatsoever. So actually in Western New York, I didn't get a lot, but I got some replies on Twitter like, hey, look, most people had Kincaid super high, this and that. I value yards after the catch way more than I think a lot of people for wide receiver and tight end. And for as good as Kincaid was in that regard in 2022, it was really the only season that we saw that from him. And he turns 24 as a rookie. So those were like kind of my reasons why just generally I was a little bit lower on him because I thought Michael Mayer and certainly Sam Laporta were better in the yards after the catch department. Right. But again, the Bills maybe are like, look, we have not been, and they haven't, they have not been a big yards after the catch team. They are about precision and they probably create separation with their scheme and their personnel better than any team in the NFL. I think the Chiefs and the 49ers and the Bengals are better after the catch. So it's just kind of a different philosophy. So that's a good point that you brought up because my draft rankings are just, you know, in general, if I was, you know, the GM of an expansion team, as opposed to, hey, maybe the Lions really want yards after the catch. That's why they pick Sam Laporta. And maybe the Steelers love size and physicality at the tight end spot. That's why they opted for Darnell Washington.
Exactly. Exactly. But that background, like you said, just to emphasize, the Bills want to run more 12 personnel. I think everybody wants to run more 12 personnel.
They do. Yeah.
Everybody does. And it was a great tight end class. And heck, Green Bay said, we'll get both of our tight ends for our 12 personnel in this class. Two good ones. And you mentioned Sam Laporta. And I want to pause before we talk about, well, this is a fantasy fit too, because I like how you said, certainly Sam Laporta. Like maybe that should be his nickname, certainly Sam Laporta. Thor Nystrom, who I love, was on and said that without Sam Laporta, Iowa would have had one of the worst Power Five offenses in the last 25 years.
That's a great
quote, right? And Detroit and Laporta, and we could talk about the nebulous fantasy rankings, like who should you take first in a fantasy draft or something like that, but that's not nearly as interesting to me as, again, I first primarily watch the draft through the lens of what are we learning about how this team is going to go about building what they have, right? And it's from a fantasy football player perspective, it's immensely fascinating because it's what we love about fantasy football is how do we attack a draft, knowing like here are the resources available, here's what you have, how much you can dip your spoon in or cup into the river, and what are you going to get? How are you going to build this thing with this goal of winning? And you know, it's a very superficial statistical based winning, but it's the same process, right? And I'll just tee it up to you this way, because you did say that you didn't like Atlanta's draft, which I think was more the consensus. I mean, if you did a poll, more people would say, yeah, I would rather my team not take a running back in the top 10 than my team do, just all other things being equal. So a lot of people were banging on Detroit's draft. Man, a lot of people were banging on Detroit's draft, Chris. I loved it. But maybe it's just, I know we're both like Rust Belt denizens, and you've given me my Steelers praise. So we're good. Like, we're good. But I am kind of adopting Detroit. I do love what Dan Campbell's doing. I do think they have clarity, much like we were saying with Atlanta. Agree or disagree, they have a plan. Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell, they're on the same page about what matters, how they're going to build this team, how they're going to allocate their resources, what kind of binds they want to put the opposition in, and how these players will help them accomplish that. But people hated it. I think, again, starting at that NBA at resource allocation, because what is a linebacker going to get paid? What's a running back going to get paid? Where did you fall on the spectrum of reactions to the Lions draft?
I really liked it, and that is while still saying a lot of what, or like having similar thoughts to what I had about the Falcons picking a running back at 8, Jahmyr Gibbs at 12. There's two differences though, why I was a little bit more ready to accept the Lions picking Jahmyr Gibbs at 12. They traded back, so they got an extra pick. So I like that just philosophically in any draft when a team trades back. And to sign David Montgomery, who to me is maybe the best, if not a top 3 running backs in the NFL going side to side laterally. His jump cut ability, sinking his hips, getting low to the ground, making him really difficult to be brought to the turf on first contact. He's amazing in that regard. We don't see a lot of, you know, 60, 70 yard runs from him. I think he did have one last year, though, actually, like a 75 yarder. But in general, not a speedster. He complements Jahmyr Gibbs very, very well in that offense. And the rest of their draft, I absolutely loved Jack Campbell. I thought it was not early at all. I think I had him graded right around there, 18 to 20 on my big board. I don't want to say a lot of criticism, but a lot of people felt by the time everyone was really diving into this draft class that, hey, there's really not that first round linebacker. Jack Campbell's probably going to be there in the 50s or 60s. Maybe even the Bills could pick him to replace Tremaine Edmonds. He's bigger, he's taller. I saw Jack Campbell as a top 20 prospect from the, you know, January when I watched him. His athleticism at the combine did surprise me a little bit, but I thought in terms of his tackling radius being bigger, he has shorter arms, but he is 6'5". And his coverage ability, he is so far ahead in that regard, recognizing routes, understanding when there's a crosser behind him, making plays on the football. I think he beats blocks well. Mm-hmm. He stays square to the line of scrimmage. So that those cutback lanes, he's going to be on those cutback lanes when those backs make that cut against the grain. And that's really what the Lions defense needed. I think they needed a quarterback in the middle of that defense. For as much as we've seen linebackers come off the field and every team's running nickel with just two linebackers as their base defense, it's kind of funny that we've seen a linebacker come off the field, but to me, that has actually made linebacker more valuable because if you have a really good one, your defense is, I think, a lot better. And you look around the league, the best defenses usually have a Fred Warner or a Matt Milano type player in it. And those are just two off the top of my head. DeMario Davis has been so good for the Saints into his 30s, and that defense has been very good for a long time now. So I love the Jack Campbell pick. I did not think that was too early. I love Laporta. I thought he was kind of a light version of George Kittle because of how strong and explosive he is after the catch. And then Brian Branch, like, there was no way that he should have been there at 45 overall. Right? I thought the best tackling defensive back that I've ever scouted. And that's going all the way back to 2014. And I look back in my notes, there was no one that I felt as strongly about like this guy in space, in tight quarters, in the box. I'm relying on Brian Branch to make a tackle almost every time. His instincts playing that star position that Minkah Fitzpatrick played so well, Landon Collins at Alabama. I thought intermediate level where most of the passes are being thrown today from 0 to 19 yards down the field. He's just going to make plays in zone if he needs to match up. Mm-hmm. Not a crazy athlete. So those picks, three of the first four, I really, really liked. And I understood, again, Gibbs being that explosive playmaker. One other guy that I'll talk about is Antoine Green, just kind of sprinkling in a fantasy. I loved Antoine Green. He could have been that offensive version of Corey Trice, where I thought he should have been probably a third-round pick, third or fourth rounder, and they got him in the seventh. Watching North Carolina's offense last season, it was all – really Cole Beasley type stuff to Josh Downs. Underneath quickness, he was their possession receiver from the slot. We usually think of possession receivers being those bigger outside guys. When you're watching that offense though last year, you would occasionally see this lower volume perimeter wide receiver make a circus catch down the field or catch a wide receiver screen and stiff arm a corner and then break another tackle and then get into the end zone. That was Antoine Green. He tested very well. I thought getting him in the seventh round after they lose DJ Chark, they kind of need that outside presence. Certainly being a seventh round pick, the odds are against him a little bit. He has to be good right away to kind of earn more playing time in the preseason and, you know, to further his career early on. But I think Antoine Green is someone you could tell me if you think he should be worth a pick in dynasty, things like that. But he's a name that I think is definitely worth monitoring in training camp and the preseason, because he's what the Lions need in terms of a role player that he can play on the perimeter. Loved him after the catch, and he's got good overall athleticism as well.
I think the best thing about that pick when I was looking at it, Chris, is Jameson Williams is going to be suspended for 6 games.
Yeah, that too.
So that's so there's a roster spot. Like you said, seventh round pick, scratch and claw just to you're probably looking at a practice squad, right? Like it's probably at this point a W if you are a practice squad player as a seventh round pick, because the team is saying you're worth investing in and we're going to develop you. But there is going to be a roster spot open, and it happens to be a player that does a lot of the same things that Green does. So it's a smart pick. I mean, I thought
it was a great draft.
Yeah. I loved it. And the thing is, it's all perception, right? Imagine if they took Branch at 12, Gibbs at 18, and Campbell at like 45. Yep. Everyone would have been like, what? Like you said, the four players are great. But what really stands out about their draft to me is this intersection of players that have skill sets, talents that fit in what they need and how they play football. And then just there's just an ethos of what it is to be on this team. And I think it's going to cause certain players. You mentioned Dave Montgomery, you know, what a perfect fit, right? Just what we can intuit from the outside looking in. And I think something that a lot of people really don't understand about football, and I'm not saying I do. Last year I played football was in sixth grade for like 2 weeks. But it's a family, you know. It's really, there's a intense bond or lack thereof. It's just a business for some players. But I think you can see that that's not the Lions. That's not how the Lions are running their program. And that's not the kind of guys they're going to get. Like a guy like Sam LaPorta. A guy like Sam LaPorta, like you said, George Kittle, you know, just in terms of the element he brings. Jahmyr Gibbs, why are we calling him a receiver? I do think, Chris, I do think that we're getting closer. And we'll talk about this later on. Well, you're not that old, but you're not. You didn't just start out doing this, you know, this is not your first rodeo. But we may, with players like Gibbs, we may stop in players like LaPorta wanting to pigeonhole or classify players in this way. And I think the good organizations already understand that.
Yeah, they do.
And you mentioned Jack Campbell. And again, this is just the guy they needed. This is exactly the guy they needed. Who cares where they took him? They understood this. There was a Jack Campbell-shaped hole in the middle of their defense. So they made sure they got him. It wasn't a great draft, honestly. I mean, across drafts, it wasn't a great draft. Okay, and I want to touch on a couple more players from a fantasy fit perspective. I was going to touch on Gibbs, but I think we can agree that Gibbs is going to work out.
Yeah, he is, especially behind that line.
Yeah. This is going to work out. And they built, and then remember that about how the Lions went about this. They built the line first.
Smart.
They had a little bit of an assist from the Bengals taking Chase over Sewell, but they built the line first. What do we think about Devin Achane in Miami?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's like, for me as a draft analyst, it's like I have to compartmentalize and say, like, the value was that good there? Should they have gone a different direction, picked offensive line? I've gotten a lot of that post-draft, because in grading it, I loved it. I thought, just in terms of the player, and you just been talking about fit, truly, that might be the best fit in terms of what a coach wants from a specific player in the entire draft. Like, speed, one cut ability. Achane is not LeSean McCoy. He's not going to make guys miss. Even like David Montgomery, side to side, his contact balance isn't special. He's small. But hitting the front side of that stretch zone running play that has been a staple all the way back to Mike Shanahan, to Kyle Shanahan, now to Mike McDaniel in Miami, and just what they prioritize down there, clearly, that McDaniel took from Kyle Shanahan, is borrowing that speed all over the field. I thought that was a tremendous just fit, and what that team, it's like adding to a strength. Like, you could say that maybe the Lions had a Jack Campbell size hole in the middle of their defense. They already had speed with Raheem Mostert, of course, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. With Achane, they get someone, the fastest running back in this class. I wonder from a fantasy angle, though, like how much action he will see as a rookie, because I do think that McDaniel is a very smart head coach and understands, like, hey, like, we need to throw the football probably 70-ish% of the time to keep up with the Chiefs and the Bills and the Bengals in the AFC, even the Chargers. So even if the run game is pretty good for the Dolphins this season, and Achane shows that his vision between the tackles and certainly his acceleration and long speed are worthy of him playing early, how many times are the Dolphins as a team going to carry the football like more than 25 or 30 times a game? But if you, I mean, in strictly in terms of fantasy, A-Chain could have and probably will have a lot of stat lines like 8 carries for 70 yards and a touchdown this season, where he's barely getting the ball. And maybe 4 to 6 times he stopped for a loss. It's just that one play that hits the splash play. And that just from a team building angle, I think the Dolphins understand, like, if you hit a splash play over 20 yards, the chances of scoring a touchdown go up significantly. So I think they'll be fine if A-Chain doesn't really hit the ground running in terms of finding the smallest creases and bouncing off tacklers, as long as, you know, one out of every 7 or 8 of his carries goes for 10 to 15 or maybe even more yards than that. So fit was absolutely perfect. Again, thought he left a little bit on the table in terms of make you miss ability, contact balance. Again, this is kind of going back to the story of grading a running back as a whole as compared to just the fit. I kind of feel similarly about Justin Shorter, the wide receiver that the Bills
play.
Not a perfect receiver at any rate. Like, he is not going to create separation. He is not going to create after the catch, but playing in the Gabe Davis role,
exactly,
just get down the field and run posts and go routes, I can understand it in the fifth round. That's pretty much how I felt about Devon A-Chain. Great landing spot in Mike McDaniel's offense in Miami.
Yeah, on Shorter, I was almost going to mention him after we talked about Green, that teams are looking for things. And with the Shorter pick, and I believe the Bills moved up for that pick, I believe.
But either way,
with the Shorter pick, it, you know, that's your, hey, if Gabe Davis gets overpaid or if he disappoints, I mean, that's because you have a dedicated role in your offense. And it, again, the bottom line is, don't tell me what he can't do. Tell me what he can do. A-Chain's a good example of, like you said, there are things that you can't do with him, but what the Dolphins need out of their backfield is what he can do.
Yes.
So, and this is where you, it circles back to the criticism of the Bijan Robinson pick. Yes, Bijan Robinson can do everything. He's a plus in everything, except maybe, I don't know, like, is he truly a pile pusher? But regardless, but how much does that help you win, right? What A-Chain... what A-Chain can provide, and why is it so important? Because, like you said, it's it just getting a play side and making the decision and going. And you remember in the Shanahan, Mike Shanahan running game, like, it didn't matter. Landis Gary, Mike Anderson, Tatum Bell. Calls, well, Tatum Bell didn't quite do it, right? Clinton Portis before he got traded. The point is that it's there for a player whose mindset and skill set matches up, and his does. And what's most important about that is, and I feel like as football analysts, Chris, we didn't really give this the due it deserved, but there were some efficiency numbers in the Miami passing game last year that were just absurd, like broke some of these models, right? Like the dot that's like way off apart from all the other dots. And I mean, Tua's not that special. Tyreek Hill's not that special. Jalen Waddle's not that special. It's Mike McDaniel.
Yeah.
But what you weren't harvesting, it's obviously spacing, right? The way that they have been able to create chunk gains, you mentioned that chunk play concept, chunk gains in the middle of the defense, which is just absurd. No matter what quarterback or personnel or offensive line a team has had, nobody had done it like Miami did last year, but they weren't getting the corresponding. So if the field, if the defense has to be spaced out like that to contend with Miami's offense, there should be chunk plays for the running game there too.
Yes, absolutely.
And they got the guy for that. And I'm going to echo what you said. I think it's a great fit. And I think, again, it comes back to that running back debate where, like, just tell me what matters about the running back position in your offense. And you probably can get that without spending a first or a second round pick.
Absolutely. 100%.
So Miami, you like what they're, and then we'll see if the defense comes around. We'll see. Maybe, hopefully Xavier Howard will be healthier. Okay. I'm not going to be too presumptuous, but I am going to give my answer, right? When we said which team won the draft, and you graciously said the Steelers, and no, I didn't pay you to say that, or otherwise I need to be cheered up, so I appreciate that. I think the team that won the draft, in the simplest form of the question, and it can be any way you want to take it, I take it, it's the Colts because they did the right thing and they got Anthony Richardson.
That was my second choice for sure.
Good. So you're gonna
they're up there too.
Basically, you're just gonna bask in this, because I every time I think about it, I just want to bask in it. I want to just look forward to, and I don't want to bloom Anthony Richardson and the Colts. I make a little prayer to the football gods. I'm just looking forward to watching this dude's career unfold with Shane Steichen. And again, based on the other picks, you mentioned Josh Downs, you know, based on the other things that they have in place right now, I'm really excited. Are you excited?
Yeah, I mean, I could have certainly picked them as my winner. Those two teams to me stood out above the rest. The Colts had more selections than the Steelers, so you could kind of lean in that way. Richardson was my quarterback one in this draft class. And what I always do, I made like a kind of an unusual late change, but I watch quarterbacks first before there's any outside noise of hand size, pro days, anything like that. But Richardson and Stroud were super duper close for me before the combine. So it was not Bryce Young. It was between those two. They were about as close as I've ever had two quarterbacks graded next to each other. And then Anthony Richardson's combine happened, and I was like, man, I thought he was going to be athletic. I don't know if I thought 4.41, 41-inch vertical at that size. And right around the combine, and this is me kind of propping up myself for one in terms of mock draft prediction that I've seemingly gotten right, I was like, the Colts are the team, whether they traded, whether they needed to trade up to one before that Panthers-Bears trade ultimately happened. I was like, the Shane Steichen fit, the Jalen Hurts, the work with Justin Herbert before that, just sets them up so well to pick Anthony Richardson and understand, because Anthony Richardson is like a Lamar Jackson and a Cam Newton who needs to have the right coach and the right situation, the right expectations. I think on the other end of it, and we got to kind of see a one-year case study, I think the Tennessee Titans and Malik Willis, they were not ready for a Malik Willis type quarterback. They didn't like him. They were quick to bash him when he wasn't operating the offense like Ryan Tannehill. We saw those flashes as a runner, but when he wasn't getting the ball out on time, very rhythmically, there was a lot of, considerate or criticism from inside the building. And I thought that's a detriment to Malik Willis's future. And if Anthony Richardson landed with the wrong team, say the Raiders, where Josh McDaniels was going to be Tom Brady and understand where the option routes needed to go and read the right away. And he's never really had a running quarterback that can be a weapon in the design run game. It felt like the Colts, please, just like you're saying, just to be able to, as a football fan, to watch him in Indianapolis and then to get Josh Downs to address the offensive line. I like what they did on defense with Daniel Scott, who's like one of the best pure free safeties that I've watched as a prospect in a while. Julius Brents, who's long and athletic.
Oh, yeah.
It was after that a very classic Chris Ballard draft where he places probably more of a priority on length and athleticism and size than any other GM in the league. And what my kind of running commentary has been post-draft for the Colts is, in the past, I've seen Chris Ballard select the Ben Banigus and the Rocky Sins, who were big-time athletes that I thought, no, they're not really great football players yet.
Yeah.
Darius Rice, Edabare from Northwestern, Brents, Josh Downs. I think Anthony Richardson's a pretty darn good football player, too.
Yeah. Yes.
Scott, who you mentioned. They actually married the let's be obsessed with athleticism philosophy with let's also try to get guys who aren't like incredibly raw projects at this point. And I think from Anthony Richardson's standpoint, you've probably had Matt Waldman on to kind of dissect it further. Pocket presence, I think for being someone that was universally labeled as he's this super projecty raw player who's just a great athlete, I thought in terms of bouncing around in the pocket and navigating through the chaos, I saw a lot more flashes in that regard from Anthony Richardson than your classic, you know, big physical specimen at the quarterback spot. And I think this is maybe my, you know, Bills bias coming in here, just being in Buffalo. If you're in, especially the AFC, and you're having to contend with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, I don't necessarily want my quarterback to be smaller, that doesn't have a great arm and can't really run, because even with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, you have four or five quarterbacks right there who are still in the prime of their careers that can do ridiculous things throwing the football with velocity and precision and running the football. So maybe Anthony Richardson won't work out, but I think they ultimately went with the right quarterback and kind of navigated the draft well, because that's the type of quarterback I would want if, again, I was starting a expansion team right now.
Yeah, franchise-changing pick, right?
Yes, it can franchise. Be for sure.
Franchise-changing pick. And the only team that really could have stopped them, because Carolina did the right thing. I'm not going to knock taking Bryce Young number one. The only team that could have stopped them was the Texans. really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Texans.
There was never really any chatter for that, which I thought was weird.
Yeah. Or even if the Texans would have not traded up to number three, if another team would have traded up to number three. Now, maybe it would have been Minnesota. Maybe it would have been CJ Stroud.
Seattle, who knows? Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Who knows? But right there within the division, you see Anthony Richardson, and it's going to be great. And like you said, the AFC quarterback stacked. So speaking about this, again, thinking about these things in terms of, you said it, Lamar Jackson needs the right coach. Greg Roman was not the right coach. How much does the Zay Flowers pick make you think that Todd Monken is the right coach?
Yeah, I think that signaled to me that they're ready to kind of take that next step. What's funny is I think he's going to be the perfect offensive coordinator for them, because it's not like Todd Monken's coming in and running the air raid offense that they're going to throw it 60 times a game. At Georgia, they wanted to run the football with power downhill. So they'll still have that kind of what has become the classic Baltimore Ravens offense. But to pick Zay Flowers and to see what Todd Monken was able to do, really propping up Stetson Bennett to make him a fourth round pick, throwing the football with a lot of play action, utilizing the tight ends that we know that they're going to do in Baltimore, I like it a lot, because I think it's kind of the turning the page to the next chapter, to the modern day NFL, where sure, run the football if you're good at it. If you have a unicorn like Lamar Jackson, feature him, try to get chunk plays when you have the numbers advantage in the design run game with your quarterback. But you also need to be able to throw the football. And I think if Rashad Bateman is back healthy with him, Odell Beckham Jr. and Zay Flowers, they kind of have a sneaky good trio there for Lamar Jackson after he signed his contract.
Yeah. And Mark Andrews.
Yeah.
And still, you know, Devin Duvernay and can still add some speed. So I hope so. I think so. I think that one of the most important things fantasy-wise, or just getting enriched from understanding the NFL draft, is what teams are signaling about changes that are coming. Interesting stuff to, you know, we could talk about Arizona and what changes are coming, but that's a conversation for next year, since they what a trade.
I know, awesome trade.
Well,
franchise changing trade.
Sure. And again, there's Houston right there in the middle of this, because that was unexpected when they announced I thought 12-33 would have been just fine for number three. That would have been pretty. And you add in a first and a third, and not just any team's first and third, but a team that's going to be in the bottom half of the league. This has kind of been, we've discussed this a lot, and I like to, by the way, I want to go back and just emphasize that you mentioned Josh McDaniels. Like, here's one of the examples of the wrong coach. And I know you gave specific football reasons, but I also just think every time I mention Josh McDaniels on the show, Chris is, well, we know how this story's going to end. We know how the story's going to end. Like, we already know the ending. We'll see what the long and winding road, or maybe short, gets us there. What about Tennessee? What about Rand Carthon and specifically Will Levis? Because that's the pick, right? I mean, no, you're not tying your job to him because you got him in the second round. So good job. Were they trying to trade back into the first? I don't know. Depending on who you listen to, maybe they were, maybe they weren't. So Levis can fail, but otherwise, you know, what do we think about Levis? What do we think? I personally think that this team is going to be down in the basement of the NFL, and maybe for a while.
Yeah, I think so too. I think what you mentioned is important, that this GM is not tied to him. And it's funny how, had they traded up and picked him at 31 overall, say they made a trade with the Chiefs, there'd be so much more of Carthon being tied to Will Levis, as opposed to him being, what, 33 or 34 overall in the second round. Yeah, I think the Titans are not going to be very good either. And I kind of briefly touched on it with Malik Willis and how that situation was handled last year. The wide receiver group is just not good.
No.
I think Treylon Burks can be a serviceable player, but him as your number one, I'm a little concerned about that, for whether it is Malik Willis or Will Levis early on. And I think we've seen it, like, in today's NFL, and this has been the case for probably almost 5 to 10 years now, that a lot of teams are like, hey, we don't need just two good receivers. We need three really good ones. And the Titans might not even have one right now. So, and I always go back, because I've watched every single snap from Josh Allen, the step from year one, where the receiver group was bad, to year two, where it got better with Cole Beasley and John Brown. I think that step, we always hear about the year three step with Josh Allen, that it went from to MVP caliber quarterback to get votes in the MVP race. But that second year jump, I think, was integral from people saying, hey, is this guy a bust? And he was not good as a rookie because he got John Brown and Cole Beasley, two veterans that were ready to get open and teach him how to be a quarterback. The Titans don't have that for Levis or Malik Willis. It'll be interesting to see how this new GM handles Ryan Tannehill. He's kind of a, is he a trade candidate? Is he a cut candidate? I'm not overly optimistic about Will Levis and his future in Tennessee, because just the infrastructure around him, I think, is like at least another year away from being what would be reasonable to have for a young quarterback if you're hoping for him to succeed early on.
Maybe, maybe it'll be there next year. Maybe they'll have it in place, right? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of there's a lot of here between here and there, as opposed to what Tennessee's old offensive coordinator Arthur Smith is doing down in Atlanta. And we can knock the pick in terms of how much can Bijan Robinson add truly. However, what they
the quarterback
They're building structure around
Kyle
the quarterback,
Pitts, and so is Drake London.
And keeping the two first round pick offensive linemen, and even taking Bergeron, and even if Bergeron's better running the pass, the point is you're investing, you're building around the quarterback to give the quarterback a better chance to succeed. And I think that we can see this, right? I mean, there's quarterbacks that if the draft had shaken out differently and they ended up in a different organization, who knows? Who knows if Patrick Mahomes would have ended up with a different team and not with Andy Reid? Sometimes this stuff sorts itself out because the bright visionaries seek these things out and say, this is the guy. This is why, again, I like the Gibbs and Campbell picks, because you have got clarity. So who knows if Patrick Mahomes was not in a good organization, if we'd be talking about him the same way. And Will Levis, and the slam dunk really on this Will Levis thing, and I hope, hey, freezing cold takes or whatever, let's revisit this. I wish everybody in the NFL draft success. The reason slash excuses were, well, he had so much better structure around him in 2021 at Kentucky, and he didn't have that. Well, if you're then he's not the quarterback for a team that's two or three years away from having structure, because you're going to throw him into this environment. And what did you see in 2022? Bad habits, and bad habits getting ingrained. And he's not that guy. Now, Anthony Richardson might have made a lot more sense to throw in that kind of situation, right? That's why he thought maybe Malik Willis was going to work. But go ahead. You want to put a punctuation mark?
Yeah, just like a punctuation mark on that, that situation, the difference between 2021 and 2022 for Will Levis, kind of to me, like harken back to just an idea that, which I probably should be writing this article soon at CBS, I haven't talked to my editors, that I think we should like re-rank, and I've done this in the past, quarterbacks after they're drafted to say like, here's how now that they are with their team, we all say, oh, hey, situation matters. Ranking them after the draft. And it kind of reminded me back to my 2018 take on Baker Mayfield. And I had him as my number five quarterback when he ascended all the way to number one, and everyone loved him. Most people loved him. My like seminal point was Baker Mayfield's situation is never going to be as good as it was at Oklahoma. Like the whole offensive line got drafted. He threw to Mark Andrews and CeeDee Lamb and Marquise Brown. He had just first round and high level talent all around him. It was almost like a blank canvas if he goes to a team that doesn't have all those advantages on the offensive line at tight end and wide receiver. And I think we've seen that in Baker Mayfield's career, that he is a pretty talented guy. He does have a pretty good arm. He can be accurate, but a lot of the break the computer model efficiency that we saw at Oklahoma was more a product of everyone around him. And of course, if you have, you know, two all-pro wide receivers, an all-pro tight end, an all-pro offensive line, then any quarterback's going to be really good. That's kind of how I felt with Will Levis, that was kind of a red flag for me. Like when he had Wendell Robinson and had some draftable talent on the offensive line, he looked good. This year with more experience, that I was expecting him to at least keep the same level of efficiency, if not raise some guys to make players at receiver and tight end look draftable. We didn't really see that. So that's why, and now he lands in Tennessee where he's going to have a lot more of a situation similar to this past season at Kentucky than in 2021. That's again why I'm a lot lower on Will Levis, not only from just what he showed on film in his final collegiate season, but the situational differences and how he reacted to them, and then now where he lands in the NFL.
Yeah, or alternatively to what you said, which is a great idea, which is there's the player in a vacuum, and then there's the player on this specific team with these specific coaches and teammates. And then we can say, what do we think about the short term being during the rookie contract trajectory of their career. You can also, before the draft, rank the situations. You know, we all would have had Tennessee low in the situations for a quarterback to land in. And then there are other situations that we would say are higher because of the structure. I think, you know, Seattle, I think, would be a good example of a good place for a quarterback to land. Anyway, one of the things I want to touch on before we're a little late for off the rails, but that's okay. Is like you mentioned, and I think that teams the draft always gets us to team building, Chris, and philosophies of team building. You need three wide receivers. I think teams have known for a while you need three corners. Maybe you need four. You need three safeties. I think teams know now you need three safeties, or maybe that fourth corner and third safety is the same guy, like Brian Branch, right? You need three edge, if not four. I think the Bengals understood this with the Miles Murphy pick. The way you build your team is changing, and which positions matter. And the idea of a quote-unquote full-time player doesn't matter as much. And it's always interesting to delve into this stuff. Okay, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Dane Brugler, because you're looking sharp. You're always looking sharp, especially sharp today, Chris. You told me before we went on the air you were at a graduation, a pre-K graduation. And I asked Dane Brugler. You know, I'm going to say participation trophies and pre-K graduations. I'm for all this stuff because life is uncertain. Eat your dessert first. Yes. Let's celebrate.
My daughter loves
it. In New Orleans,
it,
we celebrate. Yeah. And in New Orleans, we celebrate everything. In like, every day that you wake up is something to celebrate. Someone was saying to me, right side of the, how are you doing? I'm on the right side of the dirt. That's a good place to start.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Gratitude. Always, all roads should lead back to gratitude and appreciation. Joy of participation. Joy of participation. Parenting. I asked Dane Brugler this. As a draft analyst, you're talking about development players. You're doing all these different things. How has your occupation helped you or affected you or changed you as a parent?
That's a good question. I think it has made me more patient. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I think naturally have always been a pretty patient guy. But as my daughters, I have a soon to be 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, and that as they've learned to be able to talk and to explain what they want, what they need, I think it's easy for parents to say, hey, they can talk to me now. So they understand every concept that's going on. Or when they say, I hate you, dad, you're the worst dad in the world, that I need to realize, like, although they're saying that statement, that they don't understand the meaning behind it. They're just mad because I didn't give them a second helping of like ice cream or something like that. Right. And it kind of ties back to Anthony Richardson, Josh Allen in my backyard, being able to watch and to not make those to draw those definitive conclusions right away, watch the growth happen. Certainly allow there to be those markers that you want to hit throughout the development that I've seen with my daughters, with walking and talking and not, just keeping everything to themselves, sharing when they've gotten to school and things like that. So yeah, it's funny. That's a really good question because there are a lot of ties. And I think understanding certainly full well, even though we are kind of in an NFL where people want to see instant impact stars or you're either awesome or you're a bust. I think most people understand, especially if you're in the analyst field, that it does take time for these 20 to 21, 22 year olds to develop into a star. I always think back to Davante Adams that early in his career in Green Bay had some big drops, and a lot of Green Bay Packers fans like wanted him cut. Like they were done with him. And now he's become an elite borderline, maybe Hall of Fame wide receiver. That's kind of how I feel about my kids, that it's definitely patience is important. Yeah. Set the, you know, fundamentals for them, but patience certainly matters as they continue to mature into being, you know, teenagers and then young adults.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. We all could use more patience, right?
Yeah.
As a parent, I would say I've learned that what you're doing works, but you don't see it for a while after. That's part of where the patience comes in. I think I'm thinking of Guns N' Roses too. Cue the Guns N' Roses. And you know, parenting is crazy. Parenting is a ridiculous, especially the way we do it in America in the 21st century. It's just terrible. I mean, trying to influence another person's behavior is a fool's errand. Try to change your own behavior as an adult when you have great, like you said, fully formed executive function that these kids don't have. So it takes patience. It takes patience with ourselves too. Man, you learn a lot about yourself as a parent, maybe that you didn't really want to learn. Do you know what one of the worst is? And I say this, my father. I love my father. It's complicated. May he rest in peace. But when you feel your parent come out in you.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. I've had that a lot.
Whew, that's wild. When you kind of feel someone else take the steering wheel, but that's real. And then we do it to them, and our kids are going to have to deal with that too. What we get to deal with every week here is great guests, great people, great time spent together. It's a beautiful thing to get to think about football, talk about football, really, but just in the name of connecting and sharing what stimulates us. And you give us the space to do that on the couch with the football guys. Everything, it's springtime. All the flowers are coming back. The draft is over. Drafts are starting. Everyone's getting ready for fantasy football. We are, tons of stuff going on there. Check out Chris's work at CBS Sports and be patient. Go ahead.
Can I just throw in one last thing? Cause you're mentioning fantasy drafts. The one name that I've been trying, any fantasy spot that I've done or anything, Dwayne McBride from Minnesota or on the Vikings, seventh round pick, had one of the highest forced missed tackle rates in all of college football last season, was really good in 2021 as well. Obviously, the Dalvin Cook situation is very uncertain and almost feels like at this point he's not going to be on the team. If not for week one, he feels a trade deadline type of move. There's only Alex Mattison, Ty Chandler in front of him. I think Dwayne McBride, whether it's dynasty, whether it's just in a keeper league, Dwayne McBride, he was another one that I was shocked was still available. I mean, I understood it because it was a running back, but I was pretty surprised he was still available in the seventh round. They have a good offensive line. They have that stretch zone scheme. He's kind of my favorite overall fantasy sleeper that I really think could be a good player and help win your fantasy league for you this season.
I love it. I love that basically as I'm trying to do my sign off.
Sorry.
No, it's great. It's great. It's folks, Chris, who's a wonderful human being, is saying, I just have to interrupt you before we end the show because your listeners need to know that Dwayne McBride, it's that strong. And yeah, it's because we're going to see Dalvin Cook probably released or traded, probably released. And Alexander Mattison is good, but look at his contract and you can see what the team thinks of him and what the NFL thinks of him. And it wouldn't be a surprise at all if McBride at least pulls even with him, if not eventually overtakes him. So there you go, folks. Dwayne McBride, UAB, highly productive. And maybe he fell in the draft because, again, what the Vikings need, he can do, but he is not necessarily a three down running back, not necessarily a running back that other teams were looking for. But again, folks, I want to just say again, hit on that last note of gratitude, that giving us the chance to do this. It's May and football always keeps us stimulated. You all give us the opportunity to do that. Thank you so much because you're so classy.
Get a record player, start a record club because it's the ritual. It's marrying music back to ritual. And whenever you take your record out and you handle it very gently because it's a precious thing, and you put it on the record and the sound of the needle going on the record, we all know what that means, how that prompts you your whole life to remember it. And it's a moment in your life when you slow down and you make yourself ready to receive something.
Let's just make this one giant show.
Right. Run on sentence.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen ed provided by Strayer University affiliate Sophia Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.